turn it on. There's a switch on the side.
It is on.
Turn the other switch on.
Hello.
So, how many of you use Max or Power PC hardware? Or how many of you run Linux on those? Yay. Okay, so Fedora runs on PowerPC as it does on Spark and i64. And we're working to release a Fedora Core 4 tree, like a proper release, really soon now. In fact, does your machine have web access?
Uh-huh.
Okay, cool. We can build it like a little website in a while. Right. So if you want to email me, you can email me, but don't. There's a list. Okay, so what is the PowerPC port? It runs on all kinds of PowerPCs, including run-of-the-mill Macs that you get that are cheap from the Mac Mini, all the way up to your T5s, which we just actually fixed yesterday night, to IBM Power boxes. Turns out Red Hat has a build system that includes a couple of IBM Power machines, and this is why we get Fedora running on it easily. It just so happens that the installer is a little warped and T5 support wasn't working for a while, but that works now. It's been around for quite a while, probably even during the Red Hat Linux days. I'm not too sure about this. Was it around, Elliot?
We had the packages.
The packages were there, yeah.
I used it too.
Yeah, it was around. Yeah, I only started participating since around Fedora Core 1. Previously, I used to use Debian and Parks, which was a nightmare. Because you had to run unstable like, all the time. Okay, so Core 1, Core 2, Core 3 have had more users, and it's been growing steadily ever since we started having more people use it and more people make noise about it. And for Core 4, we really, really plan on actually having real ISOs that we don't make you eject with a paperclip or use NFS to install. So what do we have working? Everything on x86 you have, you'll pretty much see on PPC. We do not build a few software packages on PPC64 because they're not 64-bit clean, or they just refuse to build. And the Red Hat way is, if nobody fixes it and it's going to hold back releasing something else, you exclude the architecture for a while until someone fixes it. So I took a gander yesterday, and we only have like 31 packages that we're missing on PowerPC. And some of them we can never run because they're like Intel assembly stuff we have, and most of them are just PPC64 that are disabled. Everything pretty much runs on PowerPC 32. All your hardware is known to work, including your old DMAC stuff, which was also fixed yesterday. Except Airport Extreme, which probably will never work because even Linus himself says Workdown is shit. Right, yeah. Sleep in the newer iBook, GeForce, and PowerBooks in a stock kernel will not run, will not work. But this was fixed with a kernel patch that Benjamin Herrenschmidt released, and in fact it used the G5 tree that we have from yesterday. The kernel patch is already inside. So David Woodhouse actually makes these kernel patches and uses the pretty BK merge tool to make that happen. The latest touchpads in the new PowerBooks that Apple just released last week, they're not ADB devices, they're some stock USB device that totally doesn't work, but it's because they've got some new trackpad for navigation. 3D accelerated graphics with video cards, that usually doesn't work either because people like NVIDIA release binary-only drivers and they only make them x86 anyways. And the modem. The modems usually don't work, but who uses modems anymore? Oh, okay. Yeah, if you want to get modem support, you have to pay like $20 to get it from LinuxN.com sell drivers, but they don't work in the stock Fedora kernel because of the stack issue. So you're going to have to compile your own kernel. Well, they provide some kernels to them. We have Fedora extras on PowerPC, and as of this week, I think we have more Fedora extras PowerPC packages than we have for x86 or x86-64. Because our human build system has been here, as opposed to our human build system for PowerPC who's sitting in the UK now. So there are actually newer packages for extras available than there are for x86 this week. What we want to have working. We currently have this very insane method of wanting you to install this by using a burning the boot ISO, popping it in, and either doing an NFS, HTTP, or FTP install. You can just mount all the NFS, all the ISOs you download. We have four ISOs available for CD1, 2, 3, and 4. And that's the easiest way to actually install Fedora Core 3. That's going to change when we fix Anaconda. It's gotten to a stage where only auto-partitioning doesn't work. And blessing the disk by running npaof boot, that also doesn't happen now. So we don't need to run yaboot config anymore to create a yaboot conf file. Better video detection out of the box, this does not happen. This is flaky, and there's no real way to prod the device tree.
Sure there is.
Accurately. LSHW doesn't
not right.
We're getting we're getting weird answers from LSHW or even the proc device tree, and we can't get reliable video support. I mean, sure, we can run the tool. The install document tells you to run this tool called xautoconfig. That's a Yellowdog tool. We don't want you to use that. We want systemconfig display to just work. Sound. By default also doesn't work. However, with systemconfig soundcard, the moment I posted a list, a hacker actually came up and started working on the Python package and making it happen. So there's actually an open Bugzilla ticket for systemconfig soundcard now. And if you apply that, you'll actually detect your soundcards properly. I don't know when it's going to be deprecated, but hopefully it will be soon. Our 64-bit support was flaky right up until yesterday, like I said. We have a FC3 tree available, and the only issues with that is that the boot ISO stuff is still an issue. Power management has always been a problem. We just fixed that by putting apmud into extras. Extras is now official, has been official for a while, so apmud is now an extras package that builds a PowerPC 32. People complain about battery life support, but this is something that they lose maybe half an hour out of their whole thing as compared to Mac OS X. This is a general Linux and Mac problem that all the other distros suffer from too. We don't know what's going on. Video out on iBooks and PowerBooks, this is flaky. However, with apmud, if you have a Radeon M3 or Radeon M6, it will work. We have M3 mirror and M6 mirror built, patched in. If you have a Radeon 7500, like some of the newer iBooks have, or the Radeon 9000, those don't have video out, don't worry. Mac on Linux enables you to run OS X on Linux either in a file or directly on the partition. This stuff still doesn't quite work yet, and I think when we should get it working, we probably should package it into extras. You can try some ugly hacks with sheep.c. So we want people to actually start hacking on Anaconda, I guess. And I just found out yesterday that one of the Red Hat people in California who's working at IS is going to start hacking on Anaconda for auto partitioning stuff. Because they've been using Yellowdog previously and now they want to use Fedora.
Is that
Aldi?
Oh, Aldi, okay.
Yeah. Aldi's going to start hacking on Anaconda.
That's why I sent you patches then, okay.
Yay! See, there we go, there are patches coming in already. He only installed this yesterday, mind you. So did the RPM maintainer JDJ. He also has Fedora running on his Mac now. Systemconfig display needs fixing. That's in Python. Xautoconfig does it very manually because there is very few Apple hardware out there anyways, but we want better detection. System Project SoundCloud is another Python-based app, and that can be fixed. AP1 is an extras. Kernel and user space apps, there is definitely talk, and this is going to happen, that we're going to rebuild everything with ECC4 soon. And the kernel on PowerPC does not work really well because of the way structs are handled in ECC4, in the sense that you don't, if they're not type def before, they won't compile. So these are fairly easy fixes, and I think they're happening slowly. This is an upstream PPC issue. And I think by 2.6.11, most of this should work. Kernel 2.6.11. But user space apps, we don't know how they're going to handle ECC4 on PowerPC. But we don't care about user space. Yeah, how you can help? You can start testing the test releases we push out. You can always start coding. There is an install guide that's the like 18 steps for you to follow. Join the list and help out people that want to install Fedora in GC. We have a friendly IRC channel that most of us hang out at all the time, and we will happily answer your questions. Try Rawhide. Rawhide is semi-broken, but it works. In fact, let me just point you to something. Like I said, we just have a FC3 PPC tree running now for G5s. It pretty much just got released. So if you have a G5, give it a go. And since he fixed the BMAX stuff, now they have MAX 64 boot ISOs available as well. So go ahead and give it a go. Yes. Okay, so there's good enough bandwidth for you to download the ISOs from there, or you can do an install directly off the website. And it's an FC3 tree. This is not Rawhide, so it's still relatively older, but it will work. So do you have any questions? Or would you like to try Linux on your Mac? I have a Rawhide tree here if anybody wants. And if you want to see it running, Jesse here has his Mac running Fedora Core 3. And it all just works, including his stream. No, his stream doesn't work. Everything else does. So yeah, questions? Or you can just hassle me anytime throughout the TonTon. Otherwise, I'll just pass you on to Spark. He's going to talk about Spark.
All right, so let's have fun.
I'll do it.
Hey, so we're going to talk about Aurora Spark Linux, which is the closest thing that we have to Fedora on Spark today. This is our pretty little picture, you know, the Tux Penguin with an Aurora in the background, very pretty. So, a little bit of history about Aurora. In 1996, Red Hat released the first version of Linux on a distribution for Spark. And then, on April 2000, they released the last version of Red Hat Linux for Spark. There was a 7 beta for Spark, but not too many people used it because it was really, really broken. So why that had...
What? That's why there wasn't a final.
Yeah, exactly. So. In 2001, there were only three major Linux distributions that were supporting Spark, Debian, Mandrake, and SUSE. Of those three, the only one that continues to support Spark today is Debian, because they never kill off anything. So, in late 2000, I owned a Spark Station 5, which I named Aurora. And I named it that because that was Sun's name for the style of the chassis that they used for the Spark Stations 4, 5, and 20. Now, initially this machine was running Red Hat Linux 6.2, but I really quickly found that I was getting frustrated with the age of the components that were in that release as compared to what I was using with Red Hat Linux 7 on my Intel machines. And then I went to go look at what was available to me. Debian was really, really old. It was older than Red Hat Linux 6.2. Mandrake wouldn't install properly on the Spark Station 5, and after spending the previous 3 months trying to get SUSE for PPC working on RS6000, I really wasn't interested in trying to go down that road either. So what I really wanted was a matching version of Red Hat Linux 7 for my Spark Station 5. Unfortunately, the Red Hat Linux 7 sources wouldn't build cleanly from a Red Hat Linux 6.2 environment. So, since I couldn't build Red Hat Linux 7 directly from 6.2, I built Linux from scratch and used that as an intermediary. Basically, spent the next 6 months compiling and installing packages on my machine in order to
get
a user land scenario that was as close to Red Hat Linux 7 as possible. So, you know, during this process, I spent a lot of time asking people, you know, what am I doing? What's going on? Does anybody else know anything about Linux on Spark? And I discovered there were a couple of other people interested in the packages I was building, so I decided to make the packages I was building publicly available. And since I couldn't legally call it Red Hat Linux, that name was already used, I named it Aurora Spark Linux after my Spark Station 5. But the first build of Aurora really wasn't very complete. It only had a fraction of the packages that Red Hat Linux 7.1 had. And it was primarily designed so that somebody running Red Hat 6.2 could upgrade some of the functionality, glibc, a couple of the core packages, nothing fancy. And this was before things like Yum. So it was extremely painful to upgrade most of these packages. It usually involved dash dash no depth, dash dash force to make them go in. But thankfully, an individual named Jakub Jelinek, also working for Red Hat, discovered that I was doing this work and suggested that we merge trees. He basically handed me over 50% of the Red Hat Linux 7 tree and said, here you go, had this built, didn't know anybody cared. But he wasn't interested in doing a distribution, so he said, hey, you run with this. So I said, all right, great, well, we're over 50%, let's go ahead and make the whole tree. So at that point in time, I looked at Red Hat Linux 7.3 for our target case. On July 1st, 2002, we released build 0.3, which was all of Red Hat Linux 7.3 rebuilt for Spark, except for the installer. We took this build to Linux World 2002, where we had a booth in the .org pavilion, and we handed out CDs to very confused people who thought they were getting something useful. Sun actually came over, and the only nice thing that Sun has ever done for us, gave us the Sunblade 100 to show Aurora on, and we spent most of the pre-show time fixing bugs to try and get our build to run on the new machine. On August 9th, we had the first installable build of Aurora. And it was about this time that I discovered that I actually had users that I didn't actually know personally. So they started filing bugs. With a lot of patience and some help from people like Peter Jones and Jeremy Katz, we got the 1.0 build of Aurora completed on January 19, 2003, approximately 8 months after Red Hat Linux 7.3 released for Intel. We marked the build stable, and lots of people still use it today. So we started doing work on a Red Hat Linux 8 tree, and then we started work on a Red Hat Linux 9 tree, and then Red Hat Linux went away. And so we sort of stopped working on trees that we knew weren't going to go anywhere. And there were a lot of users that didn't want to lose Red Hat just because Red Hat stopped making Red Hat Linux. They basically came to me and said, hey, you need to make Red Hat Enterprise Linux for Spark. I didn't want to do this. Why? Well, because I didn't want anybody to think that Linux on Spark was enterprise tested or ready. Colin had a lovely slide in the previous presentation where he described the hardware that doesn't work. If I had a slide like this in this presentation, we'd be here for several more hours. Most of the hardware works enough to get the basic functionality core running. There is so much hardware that doesn't work, or doesn't work appropriately, especially in the 2.6 model. It's fun to play with. It's a lot of, you know, we can get most of the stuff that most people care about working, but you really don't want your bank running this. And I didn't want to use the word enterprise with my work and have somebody at a bank go, hey, we've got some leftover Sparks, let's run this. So when the Fedora project was announced, or rather when the Red Hat Linux project, then the Fedora project, it gave Aurora a good source code tree to use as our base, but with an aggressive timeline that was impossible for us to keep up with. Unlike PPC, we don't have any Sparks in the Red Hat build system, so we're having to build everything. We can't just take their tree and fix bugs. So we sort of picked Fedora Core 2 as a good target release. We finished the Fedora Core 2 release in build 192, but when we went to go fix the Anaconda part that we had working with the previous release, which was Red Hat Linux 7.3, we found that the Spark support that used to be there was pretty much gone, and that it wasn't anything that we were going to be able to get working fairly easily. I tried for a couple of months to get it to put together, and we weren't successful. So, you know, four major releases, things tend to get rerouted. After discussing the state with Jeremy Katz of Anaconda, we decided that the Fedora Core 3 would be a better starting point for doing Anaconda Spark work. So I pushed the 192 tree. Excuse me. So I pushed the tree out without ISO images and apologized to everybody because we had ISOs and then we didn't. But shockingly enough, the community pretty much figured out how to go from 1.0 to 192 via yum. Now, for people, you know, playing at home, this is essentially taking yum to upgrade a live system from Red Hat Linux 7.3 to Fedora Core 2 in one shot. Really sick and disgusting, but it works for the most part. Since that time, we've been working on a 2.0 release based on the Fedora Core 3 source tree. Right now, right this very second, we have three packages that are remaining to be built: Comps, RBMDB, and Anaconda. And good old Peter, who now works on the Anaconda team for Red Hat, has committed all of the previous Anaconda fixes that we've done in the past into all the ones that are right, apparently, are committed into upstream Fedora CVS. Now, we're not saying that Anaconda is going to work immediately, but it should hopefully lessen our pain trying to make installable media. So, when will we have a 2 release? Of course, it's done. So, you know, I want this to be done as badly as you are because I'm really tired of seeing bug reports from people who have effectively yum upgraded from Red Hat Linux 7.3 to Fedora Core 2. Really scary stuff. So, what's for the future? The obvious goal of Aurora is to stop having to build our own base, is to get into Fedora as a core architecture. Unfortunately, Red Hat doesn't really have any Spark machines in their build system. Now, we could work around this a little better if Fedora had an independent build system, but there's nothing that exists right now for us to use. But it's coming, supposedly, maybe. So when it comes, we might be able to take advantage of that, and it might start to get us in the system so that Red Hat feel a little more comfortable taking the Spark machines into their infrastructure and knowing that it works. The other nice thing is that since Fedora CVS is public now, we can start to build and commit patches for Spark support into Fedora Extras and Fedora Base so that when we do get build systems in, we can use the core packages without having to add our own patches. And, you know, Fedora PPC has shown that it's very possible to make Fedora builds for uncommon architectures, but until all that stuff comes to fruition, we're still going to be a separate but beneficial entity in the Fedora family. So why do you care about all that stuff I just said? Well, because Aurora is, by and large, the most fulfilling work I've ever done in the Linux community. It really has been also the most hardest and annoying. Most hardest, yes. And Red Hat doesn't actually pay me to do any of this. I do all of this because I'm sick and twisted. But it proves that with patience and a healthy dose of masochism, you can make Fedora run on any architecture that the Linux kernel supports. So if Alpha is your favorite architecture, or if MIPS, or VAX, or GameCube, or Palm, or whatever weird architecture makes you happy, go for it. Don't be afraid of it. It's just a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun, and the thing you'll find is that you're not alone. There are lots of other crazy people on the internet that are more than willing to get involved and help you out. And you learn a lot, and the friends that I've met in the process have been, you know, people that otherwise I never would have met. So that's why you should care, because it's fun, and it's, you know, the true heart and spirit of Linux. And with that, I'm going to pass it off, and we're going to talk about Itanium. I would introduce you, but I don't think I can pronounce your name or that, so. Clickers in front of the laptop.
Thank you.
No problem.
Everybody hear me okay? Well, that's terrible news.
How about now? There you go.
Just to introduce myself, I'm Prem Bhargava. I'm an SGI engineer, SOAP on graphics. I'm working actually at Red Hat. My primary responsibility there is IA64, and I'll talk a little bit more in depth about that. Really what I'm going to go over here is pretty much why do we care, because I mean there is a bit of all this IA64, x86, 64 argument. I might touch on that a bit. Talk a little bit about the current known state of the development and what's going on, and talk about how Fedora actually is going to end up benefiting from some of the decisions we made here. let me just go back. My email is prerna@prerna.com. Hopefully that's easy enough to remember, if you can remember how to spell my name. Well, let's just get real to the heart of the matter here. Why do we even care about this? It seems like so few companies are using IA64 for actual production machines. Well, there are a few that are doing it. IBM, HP, NEC, Silicon Graphics. Primarily, the machines that are developed by these companies are huge, huge machines. They're large, they're powerful, big. They generate, I was at Linux World, we had a 64 processor machine, Itanium 2. I opened up the back of it just to see what was going on back there, and I swear to God, I thought I was in an oven. These things run hot. But the amazing thing about these machines is you can scale them. You can scale. That's the big word right now for Linux. We need to be able to get some sort of concept of scalability. So the example I draw here is NASA's 10,240 processor, Columbia. It's three times as big as this room, and it's running. There's all 64-bit Itanium 2s, and they're running Linux. Now, mind you, I think they would love to run Fedora, but it's just not there yet. They're running a version of Linux called SAIL, standing for Silicon Graphics Advanced Linux Enterprise, plus something called ProPath on top of that. It's a 2.4 kernel base, and it's really not the best way to go. There are a lot of optimizations that we all know that occurred in 2.6 development time frame that really would help this machine run even faster. Now, I'm going to flip back. Knowing that, we just don't get the opportunity to run Fedora on a machine this size. We don't even get to run it really many times on 32 or 16 or even 8. We're not doing that. We're missing a big, big piece of development here to see how the kernel is going to react, how our development methods are going to react to running this way. Right now, there is no FC3 release. I believe the official release status stopped someplace between Fedora Core 2 and Fedora Core 3. I tried to pinpoint an exact time frame, and that was a little bit hard to do. There is a development tree out there, which I went out and took a look at and attempted to install. There was a lot of hacking involved, and eventually what I ended up doing was installing FC2. And upgrading using Yum to FC3. There are some simple known issues. There's a broken installer because of a broken boot.image. Jeremy Katz is aware of this and claims that he has a fix in place for this. So I haven't tried it recently, but the version that I grabbed definitely did not install properly. There are a few minor bugs in some packages. But there's no hurdle we can't surpass here. That's the big thing. All of these are relatively minor, simple issues. Things like side extension being passed out through 64 bits and things like that. Well, how does Fedora benefit from any sort of development it's going to get off of IA64? There's so few IA64 developers out there. I've talked to quite a few of them, and they're all interested. They all said, yeah, you know, if you agree to, you know, maybe lead part of this effort, we'll pitch in, we'll help you, we'll test. Now, how does this make Linux, what does this do for Linux? Well, it makes it better. It gives us the opportunity to run on those big machines. It gives us the opportunity, as I said, to run on machines that have more than eight processors. IA64 debug has great potential. And great, the way the debug is laid out. The architecture itself lends itself to making things like debugging spin locks and interrupts, etc., much easier than on any other platform. For example, in the IA64, when you take an OOPS, register 28, all sorry, General Purpose Register 28 always tells you what the address of the spin lock you're stuck on is. So when you do get a dump out of a system, you can pretty much identify what's going on. This is really as well a case of that new technology. Brand new machines coming out today before other OSs are running on them are available to us right now. I think in Linux, one of the things I've noted over the past couple of years is Linux has never made that attempt to reach out and really grab a hold of a brand new technology. That's what we got to do in Linux. That's the whole point of us being here, is for us to say, that thing over there, it doesn't work. Let's make it work. So with that, I think I'm done. I'd like to thank Tom Calloway and Colin for giving me a few minutes. I asked him, I think, a week ago. Thank you very much, Tom.
Thank you. Okay, so we got a couple
extra minutes before the next session is going to start. So if anybody has any questions for any of the presenters, we'll sort of open the floor to questions. And there are no questions. So thank you very much for attending. There is a follow-up presentation here, the user presentation track. Does anybody know what the next, is the SE Linux presentation will be in here, and the developer track is Zen. So thank you for attending.